All right, I gotta stop procrastinating and just start talking. Okay. Hello, dadders. Hi. Good morning, USA. Welcome back to another episode of Shallow Vows, a podcast dedicated to American Dad. I do tell you what the show is called every time, but I don't think I introduce myself every time. I'm Sam, in case, I don't know if anybody missed that. My name is Sam. I'm from Connecticut. I'm your host. I'm your only host. It's just me talking. This is my fourth episode so far. I'm a little rusty already because I haven't recorded since last week when I did episode 3, obviously. I can't do it every day, I guess. And so I'm practicing right now getting my speaking voice back. So hopefully this sounds a little bit better. I probably sound like a rambling idiot already, but that's okay. This is episode 4, and it's obviously about episode 4 of American Dad, which is Francine's flashback, is what it's called. This is a pretty good episode. It's the show is really starting to like take shape, and the characters are really starting to like come into themselves, and it's really cool to watch from the beginning. So let me see here. Now, if you don't know, I'm doing this podcast because I'm obsessed with American Dad. I have been for like 15 years. It's like the only thing that lives in my brain all the time consistently, besides like the dementia. And I think American Dad actually helps me fight the dementia. So this is a good thing for me. You know what I'm saying? And my goal for this podcast is to get Seth MacFarlane's attention so that I can talk to him about like my fan theories, and maybe one day I can guest star in an episode of American Dad. You know, a girl's allowed to dream, right? This is America. So that's kind of what we're doing here. I'm just chilling. I do this podcast by myself. I don't have like a crazy podcast setup. I don't have a microphone. I don't have a desk. I have a bunch of rambling notes, and I figure out a way to talk to myself out loud to nobody in particular, except maybe my cats who are sleeping right now. And this is also my second attempt at doing an American Dad podcast, so I'm really trying to stick with it. So far it's going pretty good, you know, I'm still doing the thing, so good on me, I guess. I haven't given up, which I tend to start hobbies and then forget about them because I have ADD really bad. And to that point, my ADD is so bad that when I talk about an episode, I go into depth about little details that probably don't really matter to anybody, but I think they're cool. And I go in order of like how the episode goes. Otherwise, if I try to, like, reorganize my notes and everything, I'm going to miss stuff. And stuff is going to fall through the cracks. And then it's going to sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. And I can't have that, you know? I'd rather sound like a bumbling idiot than, you know, and be thorough about it than miss something. And I also wanted to say something about that. So I saw this post on Instagram that was talking about, like, tips for, like, you know, a good podcast or whatever. And one of them was, you know, get rid of like your nervous talking. So like no rambling, you know, get to the point really quickly. Don't do a lot of like ums or uhs or, you know, all that like extra shit. And I just want to say, you know what? I don't give a fuck about that. And I'm going to tell you why. Because I am not used to talking out loud to nobody. I'm getting better at it, but, you know, this is not something I do every single day of my life, so I'm not used to it. And again, my ADD is really bad. I'm gonna forget stuff. It's not that I'm nervous, it's that my brain is so scattered, and it takes a lot for me to even, like, get all of this shit together and be able to talk about it in this way. Like, I don't want to have any crazy editing. I want it to be as genuine as possible So there's no cuts. There's no, like, retakes. I do it all in one take in one sitting. And I'm going to ramble. That's just what the fuck I do. And I'm rambling about something that I like. And nobody has to listen to that. If you can't do it, that's fine. But people like to hear other people talk. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I have, like, this professional speaking voice, okay? Like, I just be talking. I don't even know what the fuck I'm saying half the time. So, usually when I say stuff, I forget about it right after. Now, anyway, I just wanted to make a point of that. Like, one take, no mistakes, throw it in the oven, easy bake, you know? I want it to be as genuine as possible. So, no edits, no nothing. I record it once, and then I just upload it the way it is, pretty much. Anyway, we are talking about episode 4 of American Dad, which is Francine's flashback. And I get a lot of, I gather a lot of information from, like, IMDb and stuff. So I take their synopsis, because if I try to sum up the episode, that's when you're going to kind of lose it. Like, I would not be able to round it out in a nice way, because I ramble. So this is what the episode is about. After forgetting their anniversary, Stan arranges to have the last 20 hours of Francine's memory erased, but accidentally erases 2 decades, causing her to think she's 19 again. So, a simple synopsis, but it's a very involved episode. We get a lot more character development. We see, if you've been listening, you know that I talk about, like, the layout of the Smith house. And we get more of that shit in this episode. You know, it changes. I'm telling you, I wasn't lying. And I have, like, a couple trackers. So I keep tabs on, like, certain things about the show. So the trackers would be, like, the newspaper headline, the flagpole in their yard, the threat level indicator on their fridge, the layout of the house, my goo theory, which I'm going to dive into in a second. Dive on in. Francine's hobbies, the moon phase of the day that the episode aired, and book titles, which those are very, like, sporadic, but they're really funny. If, you know, you're into the show, you've probably seen a couple of them. They're, like, expositional, like, just stupid things. So I keep track of shit like that. If anybody has anything else that I should keep track of, like, things that happen throughout the show, please let me know, because I'm totally open to, like, keeping tabs on, like, other things that I might not even be thinking of. So, and that's what we're here to do, right? Like, I want to talk about American Dad. This is, like, an open conversation. You know, obviously you can't talk to me immediately because I'm recording this in advance. But, this is, like, an open mic FaceTime session. So anything you want to add about the show, any little details that you have, whether or not you, like, it doesn't matter if they're stupid. I don't care. I will take anything. I will analyze anything about this show because it's, like, all I care about. So anyway, we got to the synopsis, and I already, like, went on some tangent. Now, I was talking about the trackers, and that's good. So I got to those. Now, remember, I'm literally going off of my notes that I'm looking at right now. So that's the only way I'm going to be able to stay on track and stay on top of everything. So I got to the synopsis. That's good. Now, I have, I like to give context to things that were happening when the episode aired. So the air date of Francine's flashback was May 15th, 2005. It's zodiac sign is Taurus. So shout out to any Tauruses out there, I guess. The moon phase for when this episode aired, it was the first quarter, which I think that's what it's called, like waxing crescent, something like that. So waxing crescent first quarter. The number one song in the U.S. at the time was, it's still Hollaback Girl by Gwen Stefani, and I'm pretty sure for episode 3 it was the same deal. I'm just gonna double check that really quick, because I have all of those notes in front of me. Yes, Hollaback Girl is number one song right now at this time. So, good song. Love Gwen Stefani, girl power, all that shit. The number one movie in the U.S., or I guess, like, a very popular movie at the time, it's still Superman Returns, or is it Spider-Man? Did I write that down wrong? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my, it's not Superman Returns. Spider-Man Returns. And it's directed by Bryan Singer. So I guess this movie was, like, all the rage, you know, in 2005 or whatever. On this day, on May 15th, 2005, Israeli... Palestinian conflicts cause conservative Israeli students to go on a hunger strike. Condoleezza Rice goes to Iraq to try and deal with the political tension after 34 people were believed to be executed in Baghdad. Zimbabwe releases 61 alleged mercenaries accused of being involved in a coup attempt, and one man is still in Zimbabwe with tuberculosis. I hope by now he's okay, you know? God bless. We hate tuberculosis in this house. It is the centennial of Las Vegas, and the mayor cuts the largest birthday cake in the world. I wonder how many calories that is for the largest birthday cake in the world. And also, like, that's gotta be a pretty big cake. How do they confirm that, you know? And also, what kind of knife do you use to cut the largest birthday cake in the world? Because I can't imagine it would be a butter knife. So it's got to be probably bigger than that, I guess. The guest stars in this episode, we have Ellen Albertini Dow, who plays Helen, which is, you know, she's a little old lady side character that we love. Josh Holm. Tell me if I'm pronouncing that wrong. He plays himself, and I know that he's, like, a singer or whatever. I forget what band he's in, but he plays himself, whatever. Patrick Stewart, he comes in. He is now part of the cast. He is Bullock, of course, Avery Bullock. And then we have Steven Weber, and I know that I've seen this guy's face, right? He's been in, like, a bunch of TV shows. It doesn't really, IMDb didn't really say, like, who he played. He just was a voice, so I'm not even sure who it was, but he's in there. So if you know Steven Weber, you know, tell me what other shit he's in, because I forget. And then Kenny Loggins, he has a little snippet of his song, I'm All Right, so he's kind of a guest star, I guess. And then... a couple of fun facts. This is the first time that Roger dresses up to leave the house. And we also learn in this episode that Stan likes Mr. Pibb, which does come into play later. He does like Mr. Pibb. Now, before I dive into, like, the actual episode, I said that I was going to touch on my goo theory tracker. I just want to... give a little context to that, because I've been talking about it in the past, like, the last, like, couple episodes, but I haven't, like, made it made sense. So, and I made a post about this on Instagram, but basically my goo theory revolves around Roger being in control of the Smith family and deciding, like, what they do, what they say, their little side quests, so that Roger can do whatever he wants. And that happens because, you know, if you've watched the show, you know, season 3, episode 1 is called Vacation Goo. If you haven't seen the show, I'll, you know, we'll go through it, obviously, episode by episode. But the goo chambers were like a simulation thing, like a Matrix type shit. In that episode, and Roger ended up being the one to kind of control them in this episode. I have a lot of evidence, like little details in the show that would make it make sense. And I really feel like, so before season 3, episode 1, you know, Roger, he was doing his personas and he was leaving the house and everything, but like, he wasn't like fucking with the Smith family like really hard the way that he does later. You know, in the beginning of the show, they like talk down to him, they keep him locked in the house because they don't want the CIA to find out. They don't let him do anything. Even though, you know, there's evidence and like a lot of evidence that he had this whole life on Earth for years with different personas before he was brought to Area 51. And, you know, then he was captured, brought to Area 51. Stan rescued him. He ended up with the Smiths. And up until season 3, episode 1, Vacation Goo, Roger didn't know how to, like, escape their grasp. He was stuck in the house. You know, they had tabs on him all the time. They, again, they talked down to him. They made fun of him, whatever. And as the show goes on, he gets more unhinged. He has more personas. He does more crazy shit. And they have crazier and crazier, like, little side parts of each episode, you know, like side things that the characters do. And I firmly believe that Roger is, like, controlling the whole thing with the goo chambers. And when we get to that episode, I'll, you know, I'll really dive into, like, every little thing. So right now, it's part of my tracker, like, count, because there's a lot of evidence before the goo chambers that explains why Roger does this and how it came to be, so that after season 3, episode 1, everything that he does after that and everything the Smiths do after that makes sense. So I just went on a tangent about that for a while, I think, but, you know, if I didn't make any sense, just let me know and I'll explain it. I'll type it out, you know? So if I talk about evidence from the goo theory, like Roger doing shit or not doing shit, the Smiths doing things, this is what it's about. So if you ever have any questions, just let me know. I will talk about this all fucking day. So anyway, now that I got that out of the way, a bunch of rambling. Again, I am not editing this. If you, like, if you don't like how I talk, you know, you don't have to listen. It's okay. Well, sweet dreams, Angel. I will not be offended. You know, I am just here to ramble and talk about the show. And again, my ADD is so bad, I forget what I'm talking about as soon as I say it. So, now we're going to dive on in to the episode. So, the newspaper headline in the intro is, "Hooker killed for heart of gold." I find that very sad and endearing because there are a lot of hookers that get murdered, and it's fucking terrible, you know? Like, they're working just like the rest of us. They're trying to make a living, and you want to go and, like, kill them? Like, that's so rude of you. Like, please leave them alone and let them make their money. And, you know, they're probably looking great while they do it, so leave girls alone, you know? And if this hooker in particular in the newspaper headline was killed for a heart of gold, I bet she was a really nice girl. So that's really sad. RIP to her. I hope she's in a better place. Okay. Immediately, my notes here, the second thing is about the goo theory. Stan hasn't started crashing into the flagpole at the CIA in the intro yet. Now, I don't know exactly when that comes in, because at some point the intro does change. You know, Roger gets in the car in different personas, and when Stan drives to the CIA headquarters, at first in the show, at the very beginning, he kind of just parks, and he gets out of the car and does his little victory stance. But then later on, there's somehow like a flagpole that he just kind of crashes into. A little fender bender action going on every episode. So we'll be paying attention to when that comes in. And again, this is why I love going episode by episode, is because I'm also starting from scratch. whether you're a new fan or you're an old fan, I just think that, like, going over the whole thing gives everybody a different perspective, right? You know, like, I'm thinking about it in a new way. I've been watching this show for so long that, like, I have almost entire episodes memorized, but, like, going in detail from the beginning is really cool. So we'll be paying attention to that. And then at the very beginning of the episode, seeing their house, there is a flag on the flagpole. So there's a flag outside there in their yard. And we immediately open with Stan yelling at Sesame Street, which is very, very typical of him. You know, he's a very angry man. He likes to be mad about stuff. He gets mad all the time because people are stupid about everything, right? And he loves to yell. Because if he doesn't yell, he gets very tiny hard poops. And that probably sucks for him. So, yeah, his chronic anger is showing. That's real, you know? He is yelling at a kid's show. You know? Okay. And very typical of him also, he is, you know, he forgets his and Francine's anniversary, which happens, I think, several times throughout the whole show. Like, this is only the first time. We're gonna see it again. So maybe that's something I should keep track of. How many times he forgets? Because they don't make a lot of episodes about their anniversary, but when they do, he forgets it every time. So I kind of want to see actually how many times he does forget. And it's on the 14th. Of what month? I'm not sure. Maybe we'll find that out later, but we can always circle back. It's on the 14th. So we'll see about that. I don't know. I mean, tell me if you're born on the 14th, if you have a significant date on the 14th, and yeah, we can talk about it. Maybe we can make the 14th like a big deal. Now, you know, he is ignorant to their anniversary. So Francine is trying to like spice it up a little bit. She's like, you know, getting breakfast ready, and she's in her little nighty onesie thing, and he's like already being a dick to her. Like, he's telling her to move out of the way of the TV so he can keep yelling at Sesame Street. And he's like, oh, I gotta get ready for work. And then he's talking about like how he has to shit, and he's like, oh, I'll just do it on the way out. You're gonna vacuum anyway, right? Like, he's literally just talking about on his way out the door he's gonna shit down the stairs. Like, he has no respect for Francine or even himself, because he's just shitting his pants. Which, I mean, I don't know. Like, okay. Maybe respect everybody involved a little bit more, but, you know, he's Stan, and he doesn't really do that. I don't think he has a lot of respect for anybody except Ronald Reagan, and maybe George Bush, but Ronald Reagan, definitely. Okay, so the layout of the house. I have a little note here. So, you know, Stan ends up, of course, shitting on his way out the door. Francine vacuums it up. And the next scene is, you know, she's, like, in the bathroom, like, getting rid of it, cleaning out the vacuum. But the bathroom that she comes out of is, if we're looking at the Smith kitchen, it's the door to the right. Now, in episode 2, which was, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, Threat Levels, the door to the right in the kitchen in episode 2 was a dining room. And now in episode 4, it is a bathroom. So, do you see what I'm saying about how, like, the Smith house changes a little bit to accommodate what's going on? And again, I kind of feel like Roger has something to do with this, like with the goo theory. But again, we'll get into that later. So the kitchen door to the right in the Smith kitchen now leads to a bathroom instead of a dining room. And Roger is starting to get a little bit more antsy about leaving the house. In the beginning of the show, he was very antsy about like getting his snacks, getting his junk food, getting his soda, his chocodiles, whatever the fuck. now he is really starting to be like, I need to get the fuck out of here. You know, because if we follow my theory, and obviously, like, they show in later episodes Roger doing a bunch of shit way before he met the Smiths, he knows how to live on Earth. He knows how to do personas. He knows how to blend in. And he is really, you know, four episodes in, he's really stuck in this house. And he's really starting to be like, okay, fuck this. He doesn't care about his snacks, you know. He wants to get the fuck out. So he's starting to get antsier about that. Now, Klaus says something about his and Francine's anniversary, air quotes. At the very beginning of the show, and I think it's already starting to die down, but Klaus was, like, weirdly, like, sexually obsessed with Francine, like, super into her and, like, all this weird shit. That's obviously not a sustainable plot line because nothing is going to come out of that. I can understand why they did it because, like, Klaus is a man in a fish body. Like, what else is he going to do, I guess, except be horny for the wife? But he mentions something about his and Francine's anniversary, and it had something like it was October 25th, I think he said, and I guess she didn't wear underwear that day. Now, I don't know how he got up in there and was looking around or whatever, but like he remembered, so clearly he must have seen something very impactful to make him remember that day specifically. But really other than this, he's not like, going super crazy for her anymore. And then another thing about the layout of the house. So far up until now, there is a window still by the stairs. Okay. Now I know for a fact that that window goes away. So I'm only pointing that out now because, I want to show you which episode it is that it stops being a window by the stairs. And the little pictures that go up the stairs, now there's four of them. I think in previous episodes it was like three or four, and they kind of changed shape and size. But those kind of changed too. And then we also, like, you know, Francine, like, she loses her memory and she goes back to 1985. We don't really know anything about her past yet. We know Francine is unhinged. She's a wild housewife and she has some crazy fucking stories, but we don't know those yet. And we kind of start to see it a little bit. Like, again, they kind of give, not expositional is the word, but they do kind of give, like, a dramatic, like, teenage version of her going wild in this episode. So we kind of see it a little bit, but we don't really know anything about her yet, you know? Like, in some later episode, we learn that she, like, you know, kills one of her college roommates. She's been to jail. Like, she's done a lot of crazy shit. But at this point, we don't know that yet. And if you're new to the show, we'll definitely be diving into all that shit. So we don't know anything about her yet, which is great. We also don't really know anything about, like, any of the other characters yet. You know, their personalities are starting to take shape. But we have no context to their lore. So that'll be fun to dive into, like, for everybody. Dive on in. And then, okay, so the next thing I have here is Jeff lights himself on fire and manages to live. So he's trying to take Haley to Burning Man because now at this point, Haley and Jeff are like officially an item. You know, he's, I think, part of the cast at this point. So they're starting to like do, you know, their hippie, liberal, weed smoking shit together, you know, that kind of thing. And, he is trying to give Haley an example of what Burning Man is, as if she probably didn't already know, but he lights himself on fire and manages to live, like, with no injury, no burns, no nothing. And I just want to know, like, what kind of weed he's smoking to get that, type of medical care immediately. Like, or not medical care, but like immune system that reacts so rapidly that you have no injuries from like third degree burns. It's a miracle, especially for someone like Jeff, you know, who like isn't like, I mean, we love Jeff, but you know, of all people, you know, he gets out scot-free. So good for him, I guess. Now, the threat level indicator at this point in the episode, there's no arrow on it. So I, in some episodes, I guess that's going to happen where they just draw the indicator but no arrow. But that does change later in the episode. So as I progress, we'll get to that. Right now, at this point, there's no arrow. And my next thing here, Avery Bullock makes his first appearance. We love Avery Bullock in this house. He is one of the most insane, unhinged characters in this show. He loves cocaine. He loves shooting guns. But he's the director of the CIA in Langley, Virginia. Obviously, Langley Falls, but like Langley, Virginia. And he loves doing coke with hookers and like shooting guns. And his wife is a hostage in Fallujah. He's a crazy man. He ends up like fucking Haley in one episode, and that'll be a fun one. He is wild, and of course he's played by oh my God, Sir Patrick Stewart. I can't believe I had like a stroke out, forgetting his name. But we love Bullock. And now he is here. So now we're starting to really see, like, the full, like, all of Stan's, like, coworkers at the CIA. We're really starting to, like, that's starting to take shape as well. And then, so they go on a little fishing trip. And the CIA loves to make anything they can easier on themselves. And what I mean by that is, you know, they go fishing, but they don't, you know, they don't just have, like, fishing poles. What they do is they have an airstrike on the lake to shoot the fish with missiles so that the fish are dead, and then they can just collect the fish out of the water. And they do something like that in a later episode, way, way later, like, several seasons, where they go, like, glamping. And they don't touch any wildlife. Like, they love when things are convenient for them, which I guess maybe the CIA is like that in real life. I'm not going to say too much about that because, God forbid, I get put on a list or something. I am not talking shit about the CIA. Do what you got to do, I guess. Please just leave me alone. I'm just talking about a show. And so they do an airstrike on the lake, and obviously a bunch of fish die and come to the surface, so they get their fish, and then Ariel pops up. Poor Ariel, oh my goodness, we love Little Mermaid. And Stan kind of laughs it off, and he's like, oh my God, that's Ariel. He turns to Jackson and says, you ever do it with a dead mermaid? And Jackson's response is, mermaid? No. Which kind of like I'm telling you, the one-liners, the one-hitters in this show, which are sometimes like dry, and if you're not really paying attention, you'll miss them. But like Jackson's, he really just fully admitted to like necrophilia. Like, okay, we learned that he was like gay while he was doing real estate, you know, in some previous life of his in another episode, in the last one. But, no. Oh my God. You ever do it with a dead mermaid? Mermaid? No. Why would you say that? Why would you admit to that? Like, okay, so casually, too. Like, how are you, like, okay, Ted Bundy. Whatever. So, I love little, like, one-liners like that. Like, oh my God, Jackson. You are a fucked up man. Like, you are a fucked up man. I don't care that you, like, fall in love with, like, you know, a transgender prostitute. Like, you know, love who you love. But we don't have to commit necrophilia. You know, that can be completely avoided. And it's very easy to avoid, I think, personally. Anyway, the scene changes now, according to my notes here. And I think now we're at the mall. Steve and his little group of friends are at the mall. And this is when we're introduced to Lindsay Coolidge, another popular girl after Lisa Smith, or Lisa Silver. So we have Lisa Silver, and now we have Lindsay Coolidge, who, of course, is going to make her appearance throughout the show. And, you know, she is, like, she's eating, like, ice cream. She's licking a popsicle, doing something that would be sexy to a teenage boy. And Toshi, being, you know, I don't know. I don't know what his IQ level is, but he's obviously, like, he is very smart and has a way with words. Because it's not that he doesn't know how to talk. He just refuses to learn English. And he says something poetic about Lindsay, like how, like, she makes his heart weep or something. And Steve chooses to think he said something, like, really perverted. So I love how Steve just, like, he also never bothers to learn what Toshi is saying. Like, he doesn't even try to learn a lick of Japanese. But he assumes that when, you know, Toshi is saying something, he assumes that Toshi's agreeing with him. Or in moments like this, he's choosing to believe that he said something perverted. So it just, I think he chooses not to under, I don't, I think they choose not to understand each other because, like, maybe they don't really want to be friends. I don't know. We know that Toshi is a Steve hater for sure. But, like, I think Steve just likes having, like, another person around. Anyway, we also, this is another example of, like, how Steve is, like, chronically a virgin and gets so close to getting it in with a girl, and he just misses the mark for some ungodly reason. So, you know, he asks Lindsay Coolidge out on a date, and she says yes immediately. So girls are into Steve. He just has cock blocks everywhere he looks. So she says yes, but the condition is he has to find a date for her friend Jewel. Now you would think, okay, a double date, great. We go on a double date, I get laid. Easy peasy. No. Jewel is a dog. Oh my god, they make her so fucking ugly. She looks like a cave troll that, like, just, like, crawled out for the first time. And, this is the first time that Toshi says something in, like, a universal language. He points at her and is like, Godzilla! And everyone just, like, rags on her looks. They just ridicule her, like, to pieces. And I just can't imagine being so fucking ugly that somebody calls me Godzilla. Oh my god. That would be terrible. I would die. So I feel bad for Jewel because she really is ugly. And, like, obviously they made her that way on purpose. Like, that is not an opinion, that's a fact. And, oh my god, I can't imagine being called Godzilla. That's brutal. As a side note, because, again, I'm going in order of my notes, colors in the animation are getting more vibrant. And I just want to, yeah, do a little side thing. I love animation. I love the evolution of animation across the board. And, you know, at the very beginning of the show in the pilot, it was, you know, it was very flat. The colors weren't very crazy. They were very two-dimensional. And that is also starting to take shape. So I think in the last episode, like, we did have a little bit more dimension. We had some more shadow. We had a little bit more vibrant colors. But now they're really starting to, like, the animation is like really starting to come along. I think the technology is just like, you know, gradually improving. So we're starting to see it now, which is really cool.
That's a gift.
Okay. So, you know, Steve is trying to get it in with Lindsay Coolidge. We've met Jewel, the girl that he's got to find a date for. And that's going to be a whole fiasco. So that'll be fun when the episode circles back to that. But now we're cutting back to Stan and Francine and him forgetting their anniversary. So, you know, they kind of touch on how he forgot their anniversary the year prior. And now we're starting to see at this point Francine and like her crazy unhinged side. Because the year before, she beat the shit out of Stan in front of cops after the cops tried to restrain her. Because she was so angry that he forgot. So she even says, he'll never forget a beating like that. As if, like, beating him, like, to the point of, like, throwing him through a window was just like, oh, yeah. He won't forget that. I'm so memorable. Like, you know what? Good for you, girl. You know, that was... I support women doing anything, pretty much. So she had every right to do that. And we know that later Francine is an insane woman. So this is, like, the first little hint. She beat the shit out of him last year. And... Stan says, today is the anniversary of a huge fight me and Francine got into last year. And of course, you know, that was it. And he's remembering the fight, and he's still forgetting that it was because of the anniversary, which is this day. And, you know, he says it out loud. He's on this midnight fishing trip, and Bullock just kind of lets him, you know, remember on his own, and then he freaks the fuck out. And I think he gets home to her probably at like 11:55, I'm going to guess, because, you know, they were out fishing like almost at midnight. And my next note here is poor Whitney Houston and her coke. Now... I literally just watched the episode, but I already kind of forget why Whitney Houston was in there, but they made fun of her for, like, being, like, a cokehead, and Stan hung, like, a little, like, you know, a little bag in front of her, trying to get her to sing or something, and she, you know, they throw it out the door, she runs after it like a dog, and it's kind of like, just let Whitney do her coke. Let her do her lines. I don't know. Let her be. And if she can still sing, good for her. I don't know. Let people do what they want. Except murder, like, and child molestation. Like, please don't do those things, ever. Or hurt animals. Like, that's all I'm asking. But, like, if you're gonna do coke, I don't know. Have fun with it. You know? We're all here to party or... not party or just live, whatever. Let people do what they want. Leave Whitney Houston alone. And then, you know, Stan's like trying to talk her down, Francine, because she's obviously very upset. And he says, can you take a page from that bitch Hillary Clinton and just let it go? Like, oh my God. First of all, I don't think Hillary Clinton ever got over, you know, the whole Monica Lewinsky thing. She probably acts like she did, you know, for political reasons and for show. But, like, to compare that to Hillary Clinton, just let it go. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Stan is such an asshole. Like, we really start to see him, again, like, be a dick. And, you know, just, first of all, telling anybody to just let it go means that you want them to forget about it to make yourself feel better for your convenience. Can you take a page from that bitch Hillary Clinton and just let it go? And then calling Hillary Clinton a bitch, like, I'm, you know, I don't really have any strong opinions either way about Hillary Clinton, but, like, to just call her a bitch, like, in context to, like, the whole Monica Lewinsky thing, like, I don't know. Poor thing got cheated on, and it was made public, like, I don't know. Like, Jesus Christ. Stan has no chill in any aspect of his life. He's either doing things to the extreme or being so careless that he, like, has to, like, take accountability for it later. Anyway, so, again, Stan taking things to the extreme. I've been talking about how, like, you know, Stan really is, like, an unhinged man, and he really has, like, an insane side, just like Francine, just like Roger, but he covers it up with, you know, his whole CIA conservative Republican thing, his whole suit vibe, right? So they get into a fight about their anniversary, of course, and instead of trying to work it out with her, like, gradually, and letting her truly, like, calm down and finding ways to, like, make it up to her, he goes straight to erasing her memory. And, I mean, you know, they had the CIA technology, so he was like, okay, this is convenient for me, so I'm gonna get rid of this shit. Which I do understand, but at the same time, you don't know, like, if you think about, if that was real technology, like, that would probably fuck with somebody's brain chemistry, right? Like, I don't know. It just, it's very, like, I don't know. Stan loves to make things definitely easier for himself. So, of course, he's going to go straight to erasing her memory because that's the quickest solution. And the lab guy who does the procedure or whatever, he accidentally erases, you know, 20 years of her memory instead of 20 hours. So, you know, she thinks now when she wakes up, it's 1985. She's like 19. And, you know, of course that's going to get fucked up, right? And then they're talking about, you know, reversing, like, brain erasing, and that's when Bullock is like, that's science fiction, as if erasing her memory in the first place isn't science fiction. And the lab guy goes, kind of like the female orgasm, talking about the female orgasm being science fiction, and then they're all laughing about it. Like, okay, like, I know, like, you know, making fun of, like, women and, like, women stuff is, like, an easy target for comedy, but, like, let's be so real here. Like, that, it obviously, like, catered to, like, a specific audience. Like, it's obviously not very funny. You know, now that's just science fiction. Kind of like the female orgasm. You know, okay, good one. Great. You know, I'm so glad you probably got a laugh out of that. Anyway, and then they're talking about, you know, if, so Avery Bullock is explaining to Stan that, like, reversing memory erasal is, like, it's not possible. That's the science fiction. And he says, you know, if you do find technology that reverses it, we'll name the discovery after you. And he says, we'll name the discovery after you, like they did for Johnny Flyswatter or Doug Reacharound. Oh, my God. Again, if you're not, like, really entirely listening to, like, these one-hitters, you're going to miss them. But it's, like, Doug Reacharound. Oh, my God, that's great. That guy must have been having a good time. But I don't know if his last name was already Reacharound. I don't, maybe that is perverted. I don't know. I'm not going to think too much about that one. But Johnny Flyswatter, you know, he probably made a lot of money with the last name he had, so good for him. And then I wrote here, Avery Bullock comes in hot. So yeah, this is his first episode, and he's already like talking some crazy shit, like being weird, you know? Avery Bullock is a crazy guy, and he starts off strong. He has a great introduction. It's not expositional at all. He comes in and he's like, yeah, I'm here, and I'm here to play fucking games. I'm here to fuck around. I'm here to not do my job, and I'm here to do drugs. Oh my God, it's awesome. And of course, we love Patrick Stewart, obviously. All right, my next note here is, again, about the layout of the house, because I think in the episode, you know, we're changing scenes. Yeah, so we're in the living room now, and just a little tiny thing, there's no door for the basement entrance. So the basement entrance is behind the couch in the living room, but sometimes it has a door and sometimes it doesn't. So basically, like, any little detail of the layout of the house, I'm just going to mention because I want it on record, and then I can look back, you know, and you can look back too and be like, oh my God, look at all these little changes that happen to the house. Like, the Smith house lives in fantasy, you know? It changes, it morphs, it is immortal, it will never die, it can never truly be destroyed, and it probably has the best insurance policy ever. So, good for them. Anyway, right now there's no door for the basement, so that's just a little thing. And Stan says something about how, like, you know, Francine doesn't remember who he is, obviously, because she hasn't met him. Or she only just met him in 1985, but I think where the memory erasing, like, stopped, you know, she hadn't met him yet. And Stan is talking about how, like, oh, when she sees me, like, she's going to remember, like, our love and everything. Like, how can she forget this and this and this? And he's, like, showing off his body to the children. And he shows, like, he shows them his butt cheeks and he's no, like, you know, you can squeeze them. It's not weird. I'm your dad. So that's like, I don't know. The Smiths are very strange. They are, because he does that, like, more than once in the show. Like, oh, it's not weird. I'm your dad. It is weird because you're my dad. I don't know. Anyway, so now we're back to Roger. Roger drinking wine and smoking in the house more. So, yes. He's not so obsessed with snacks anymore at this point, kind of like I said. And he always was kind of a smoker and like a social drinker. He obviously doesn't really have a drinking problem until later, but now he's like smoking in the house. He's having like a glass of wine more often in his hand. Diarrhea more often than not. Sorry. So he's starting to do that a little bit more. So Roger is definitely starting to change, and it is because he is getting fucking tired already of being stuck in the house. And, you know, obviously that doesn't last long, which is great. But I think this maybe is where his drinking problem starts. I'm not sure, but we'll keep an eye on it, you know? And then they're watching, like, a video about people's memory being erased, and the very forgettable actor, I don't even remember what the fuck his name was that he said. I'm actually not even sure if this guy is, like, a real person, because he said he was in a couple of movies, but, like, he said he's a forgettable actor, so I don't know if they just kind of made him up or if they made fun of a real guy. I'll have to check in on that later. But I just quoted here, memory can be pretty tricky. Sorry, I'm like, I can't talk. I'm learning how to talk. Memory can be pretty tricky. Now, that's kind of like my whole thing, and why I do like each episode the way that I do it, is because memory is a tricky thing. It can make you think all sorts of things, you know, in the present. It can, you know, whatever. Memory can suck. Memory is hard. You know, there's a lot to remember in this lifetime, especially if you're, like, a little bit older, you know, and you've lived a little bit longer, there's a lot going on. You have had a lot to do. So memory is pretty tricky. And I just agree with that. I just thought, you know, that line was relevant. Okay. So we learn, like, again, we learn a little bit about Francine in this episode. You know, like, we learn that she's a party girl and, like, you know, she was crazy when she was younger before she married Stan. But we also learned that she lived in West Langley when she was 18. So she was in the area. I think her hometown is, was it Grundy? I think that's what it is. We'll get to that in, that episode, you know, where she falls down the well and is like, baby Franny. So when she was 18, she lived in West Langley. So I wrote that down. I don't remember really why, but, you know, good to know about Francine, I guess. You know, she's a Libra, and she lived in West Langley. My next thing here is Helen makes her first appearance. And Helen, if you haven't seen, is just like, she's just like this little old lady side character. She pops in and out. She does Kegels that are so strong that she can fly. And again, I'll definitely circle back to that when the episode comes, but Helen appears and she is living in the apartment that Francine used to live in. So again, Stan kind of acting the way that he likes to do. His solution is to just put Helen in some weird van, lock her in there so that, he can use the apartment to try to trigger Francine's memory. Which I guess out of all the things that Stan does, this is not very unreasonable because, he's not doing anything with Helen. He's just kind of like putting her to the side. And, I don't know, like, okay, he just put this lady in a van. She's fine. And then, so Stan at this point is working on trying to trigger Francine's memory, and he uses Haley to help. And Haley's kind of like, I don't want to live with Mom. She wasn't cool. She's lame. But then we learn that Francine is cool. She's a cool bitch. Okay, the next thing I have is, you know, we're cutting back to Steve trying to get it in with Lindsay Coolidge. And it is his idea to put Roger in a costume so that he can go outside the house. So I think it was the last episode, you know, Stan or Steve, he used Roger as like his little sympathy factor card, pretended that Roger was his burn victim sister, and Roger did come up with like a backstory for this little like burn sister victim character. But this is the first time, and I highlighted it in my notes because it is like, I would say, part of my goo theory. This is the evolution of Roger's personas and him learning how to use them with the Smiths so that he can control them later. But, you know, because again, he had all these personas before Area 51, before he was kidnapped, and now he's like learning how to adapt to living with this family. So it is Steve's idea to put Roger in a costume. And it's, you know, it's a very basic costume. He doesn't change his name for this persona. He's in a little Rastafarian costume. You know, he's got little dreads and a little hat. And he's got the Rasta colors on. But his name is still Roger. And, you know, this is a very basic thing. Obviously, Roger has some type of magical powers to make him look less alien, because he's not, like, wearing makeup or anything. So, again, whatever. This is his first costume outside the house, and this is when he really starts to leave the house and figure out how to do that. But, of course, it doesn't go very smoothly, so we'll get to that in a second. But, you know, okay, my next thing here, like I was saying, we are starting to learn about Francine's, like, crazy past. And at this point, it is, like I said, kind of like a teenage version. You know, she likes to drink and, like, she's like, party! And her hair's all messy and she looks like she's out of the 80s, and it's not anything like actually that wild in this episode, but it's a good introduction to learn that like Francine has and always will be a crazy bitch, which we love for her. And then, so when they first met for real in 1985, you know, Stan picked her up while she was hitchhiking, and at the time, he hit a raccoon driving, and he ended up shooting it to put it out of its misery. So while he's replicating her memory, he captures a raccoon again, has it released into the road so that he'd be able to hit it again this time, and, you know, kill it so that she, like, kind of remembers and does the same thing as he when he really met her. And, you know, this time, though, the raccoon, like, he doesn't get hit by the car, so he obviously lives. And he still tries to, like, shoot it and kill it as if, like, it's that's gonna help any, because that's not the way it went the first time. And this time he really, like, has to go out of his way to hunt down this raccoon. And, you know, he's chasing it. He causes all this damage. He fucks up the SUV, which was my next note. Throughout the show, we see Stan's car, the SUV, get fucked up all the time. It's just like the house. It always comes back. You know, he has it forever. It will never die. There's never actually anything mechanically wrong with it. He just fucks it up somehow and gets into accidents. And so, yeah, the whole windshield gets smashed out chasing this raccoon. And, you know, he causes, like, a lot of damage. And then we see this guy, like, on the lake fighting with his wife about how he's not coming home. I think her name's Linda. And he almost gets hit by, I think, another boat that, again, Stan caused to, like, go off the rails because of his antics. And this guy, like, he pops up again later. I just think it's funny that he's, like, you know, doing just, like, these regular activities. And he's just some guy yelling at his wife, which is not very nice. But, you know, he's just a little guy. I don't know. It's kind of funny. So this is the first time that we see Stan's SUV get fucked up. And it happens again and again and again. Okay, and then, yeah, we're cutting back now to Roger and Steve. And Roger's first real outing after living with the Smiths is going on a double date. Steve and Lindsay Coolidge, him and Jules. And they go to Sticky's Pizzeria, which I'm pretty sure this restaurant never appears again because they end up having, like, a pizza overlord. I just wanted to, like, make a little note of that in case, you know, it ever came up again. Just, like, a little fun fact. You know, they went to Sticky's Pizzeria. And this is the first time that Roger is able to leave the house living with the Smiths. And of course, like, you know, it goes weird, as it always would, but anyway, we are cutting back now to Stan. Obviously his attempts at triggering Francine's memory are not going very well, and he's getting very sad about it. And Klaus, at this point, he's starting to say less about Francine and her body and whatever, and he's starting to kind of give more sass, like, back to them. And, you know, Stan is, like, holding a picture of Francine on their honeymoon. They went to Sandals, and Klaus was kind of, like, making fun of him for that. Like, ooh, you're so fancy for going to a Sandals resort. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I'll take a Sandals resort. You know, it's still a fucking vacation to me. I still get to go swimming. I still get to go to the beach. I still get to look hot in a bikini. I don't know. I'll go to a Sandals resort for that. I don't know what the big fucking deal is. Like, Jesus Christ, you know, a vacation's a vacation. And if I'm going to go to the beach, I just want to be able to swim. And again, look hot in a bikini. That's all I care about. I'll do that out of sandals. I'll do that in Florida. I'll do it in any beach. I live in Connecticut, so I still do have a lot of beaches to go to, but I'll take a sandals for sure. But Klaus is like, oh yeah, you're so fancy. So he's just trying to give some sass back from his little bowl. And I don't know why it's like bouncing around so much. Maybe it's just because like my notes, I don't have a note for every single second of the episode. But now we're back to Steve and Roger and their double date, which does not go well, you know, because Jules is god ugly. And of course, like, Roger thinks so too. Like, everybody thinks she's ugly, so Roger's no exception. And, you know, he's now alone with Jewel in the booth while Steve is trying to talk up and wine and dine Lindsay Coolidge. And Jewel is, she's talking about some old boyfriend of hers that, like, survived, like, some avalanche, like, by eating melted snow. And Roger's like, wow, you had a boyfriend. Like, Jewel tells this story about how her grandfather, or his grandfather, or something, like, found her boyfriend who went missing on this avalanche, or some, I don't know, some trip, got caught in an avalanche, he was stuck for days, and the story would have, it is, like, an interesting one, but the problem is, it's coming from somebody that's dog shit ugly. So it goes, like, totally unnoticed and unrecognized, unappreciated. If Jewel was, like, a hot girl or, you know, even just mildly less ugly, you know, it would have been appreciated. But all Roger said was, wow, you had a boyfriend. Like, totally dismissing her, which is kind of sad, but at the same time, like, Jewel is there for this reason. She's there to be ugly. So, I don't know. What are you going to do about that, I guess, right? It's not me or you, so we don't have to worry about that. And then Lindsay and Steve are at their own table, and she asks him if they want to go back to his house and make out. And Steve is so used to rejection, so used to being a virgin, not getting girls, that he just entirely mishears her and is like, oh yeah, okay, I'll see you at school, like, thanks for everything. And he's walking home, he leaves the restaurant, and then he's like, oh my god, oh shit, she wanted to make out with me. And he realized, so delayed, that Lindsay is, like, kind of into him at this point. So he goes back to the restaurant, go gets her, and is like, oh yeah, I want to make out. So he almost lost her, and then he was able to save her still at this point. So good for him. And then, okay, I'm trying to remember my next note. I have a couple here that I kind of added later. Klaus somehow survives in coffee that he pees in. I'm not going to lie, I forget what was going on in the episode. I know we are cutting back to Stan trying to get... Oh, I remember. Jeff takes Francine to Burning Man because Haley didn't want to go. And Stan is going to Burning Man to retrieve Francine. Klaus appears, and he's in Stan's thermos of coffee. And I find it interesting that he was able to survive in coffee, because not only is that not water, but it is very dehydrating. It is the opposite of water, pretty much, I guess, even though it's made out of water, but it doesn't help you like water does. And he's pissing in it. So Stan is drinking Klaus's fish water and piss, which probably does not taste very great. And I made a little note here because one of my trackers, like I said, is book titles, the expositional things that they read occasionally. And as I was rewatching this episode, I did catch one. Nobody's like actively reading the book, but you know, before Stan leaves for Burning Man, he is looking for this flower that he gave to Francine on their honeymoon or in their wedding bouquet. She's in the honeymoon picture with it in her hair. And he pulls it out of a book from a box in the garage. And the book is Targeted Killing for Beginners. So it is a little expositional because, like, you know, Stan obviously works for the CIA. He has killed people. And I just, like, I think that's really funny. Imagine seeing, like, that real book title, like, in Barnes & Noble or something. Targeted Killing for Beginners. I don't know how that would work. I don't know if that would ever get published, really. But I'm going to, like, pull that one and keep a note on it. Because it's, like, it is technically, like, the first book title we see. That's kind of, like, an obvious, like, dumb thing. So in the grand scheme of all these book titles, it'll make sense. So this is the first one, and I'm glad that I caught it rewatching, because I would have done this episode and said, oh yeah, there's no book titles, and it's something I would have missed. So again, this is why I go in order. This is why I'm just following my notes, because we're catching a lot of stuff here, and again, it's helping my dementia, which I don't have yet, but you know, it'll happen one day, I'm sure. As life goes. So, anyway, where was I? I'm looking for... Okay, Klaus survives in coffee that he pees in. And then my next note here is we're back to the Smith house. Again, I kind of forget already what was going on exactly at this point in the episode. But it doesn't really matter. The threat level indicator on the fridge... Now the arrow is there, and it's between the green and the blue section. So, not only does the arrow appear, but someone did move it. So, you know, this thing does change, and it's going to keep changing, I guess. I think at some point maybe it stops, but again, we'll find that out. And then I wrote here, Burning Man looks like a wild place to be. I don't know. I've never been to a Burning Man. I've never been to, like, a crazy music festival like that. It probably is wild, because a lot of drugs, a lot of drinking, a lot of dancing. Sounds like my type of vibe. I also like fire, so I would love to see a giant fire. Sounds pretty cool. I would go to Burning Man. If you've ever been to a Burning Man, I'd love to hear about that, to be honest. Maybe it's as wild as, you know, as it happens in the episode. We'll see. I don't fucking know. And then, you know, so they're at Burning Man. Stan is still trying to trigger Francine's memory. It's not working. Haley goes along because she's pissed at Jeff for taking Francine with him to go to Burning Man. And I think... Go on, kids. Give them a squeeze. Did I feel bed. Like I missed something. Hold on, I'm gonna backtrack. Oh, I did. I entirely, because I can't read, I skipped over one of my little notes. So I'm just gonna backtrack for a minute. So before they go to Burning Man, you know, they, Stan and Haley realize that Jeff and Francine are missing from, like, this little house party that Francine threw. Jeff left a note on the fridge saying him and Francine are going to Burning Man. They get all upset, Haley and Stan, because it's like, okay, my boyfriend, like, stole my mom. And then Stan says, your boyfriend stole my wife. Let's get back at them by dating each other. And... he obviously realized, like, that is incorrect in a lot of ways. But I think it's funny because, you know, he's just, like, he's kind of weird. Again, like, he was inviting the children to, like, squeeze his butt cheeks. He does shit, like, on that vibe more than once. And also, in a later episode, and I forget what the episode is called... But, Stan has like a body double, and Haley ends up dating him. Hello? And his name's Bill. And Haley's like, oh, he's not like Dad at all. And they like make out and stuff, and Francine is like disgusted by it, as she should be. But I thought that was funny in that context, which I actually like just remembered like right before recording this. So, you know, we'll be getting to that episode eventually, of course. So, Klaus, threat level indicator, Burning Man is wild. So now they are at Burning Man. Stan is trying really hard not to give up on Francine, even though she's like, we are not dating, it will never happen, blah, blah, blah. Jeff is, you know, going wild somewhere. And Stan is talking about, like, the yellow, the flower that he had pulled out of that book that was in Francine's hair on their honeymoon. And he says something really romantic about it. And Haley's like, wow, Dad, I've never seen this side of you. And Stan is just like, yeah, if you tell anyone about it, I'll kill you. Which, you know, obviously, like, you can kind of say that about anything. Oh, my God, if you tell somebody, I'll kill you. But then he really goes into that, and he's like, I will reach into your chest, pull out your beating heart, and eat it. You will be dead. Like, Stan does not fuck around. He's just, again, 0 to 100 with him. So now, let's see, my next thing, we're switching gears, we're back to Steve and Roger, and now they are back at home on, like, their double date, Jules and, oh my God, Lindsay Coolidge, they're at the Smith house, and, you know, Steve and Lindsay are literally, like, inches from actually making out. Steve is so close to kissing her. And that's when, you know, Roger is in the kitchen with Jewel. And she's all over him. He's getting freaked out. And he tries to run away from her because she's got him in this, like, iron grip. And his costume falls off. And so Jewel realizes that he's an alien. And he comes running into the living room. She follows him. Or vice versa. And I highlighted this, I think, because I want it to be included in my goo theory conspiracy notes. So Jewel and Lindsay, like, see him as an alien. And Roger, like, hits them over the head with a pan. So they both get knocked out cold. And, oh, my God, this, like, I just, you know, I thought this was funny. So they're knocked out cold, out on the ground, and Roger is like, did you see them? Steve says, who? Roger says, the black guys who did this. Oh my God. Like, oh, that's so racist. Jesus Christ. Roger's a racist motherfucker, but, you know, that obviously comes back later. I just wanted to pull that one line out. Now we're back to Burning Man. Everyone else is over there. Francine is getting wasted, you know, because I think, again, they're showing a very teenage version of how crazy she actually is. So she's really just getting drunk. And she, like, almost goes on tour, like, on a worldwide tour with whatever band is playing. But, you know, she ends up not doing that. Thank God. But she's just like, I'm drunk off my ass, which is like, okay, good for you, girl. We also know that you love doing cocaine. Like, drinking in comparison is not that serious, but, you know, have your fun. It's Burning Man. You think you're going on a world tour, and you think it's 1985. And you think you're 19 again. If I was 19 again, I'd be like, hell yeah. Because 19 was a good age. I'm not that much old. I'm only 27, and I'm having a good time right now. But 19 is a pretty good age to kind of do anything. So, you know, she's living it up right now. And then the guy that was fighting with his wife on the lake that kind of got caught up in Stan's chaos, now he's hang gliding over Burning Man. And he's still fighting with his wife. And he lights a cigarette after getting off the phone with her. And he, like, knocked over the whole Burning Man statue. So this guy is just, like, I think he's a one-off character. Maybe we'll see if he comes back. I don't know. But he knocks over the whole Burning Man thing, hang gliding, sets it on fire. And it almost hits Francine. And then I just totally had like a glitch in my brain. The raccoon that Stan like was trying so desperately to kill in order to replicate their meeting. He kind of does a little like he almost like comes into Francine's mind as like a hypnosis type thing, and he's like, remember. And I call him the remember raccoon, because if I'm not mistaken, this raccoon does actually show up, I think, later in the show. But, you know, I might keep an eye on that. And of course, I can go back and always look. But I call him the remember raccoon, because he did help her get all of her memory back. And, you know, she's in the, I think, the Dave Chappelle freakout tent, which I don't really understand that. I like Dave Chappelle, but I don't know if anybody knows anything more about that. Like, let me know, because I'm not really sure, like, what the reference is there. I don't know if his fans, like, freak out at his shows or something, or, like, if he freaks out. I don't really know. But they're in the Dave Chappelle freakout tent, and Francine gets her memory back, and Stan is, like, professing his love to her while she's puking all over his shoes, which, to me, is true love. I know he's an asshole to her, and she is just, like, an insane person, and he tolerates her shit in return. But, like, to have somebody act, like, puking all over you, and you're still, like, that was gross, but I love you so much. That's so sweet. I love that. You know, like ride or die type shit. Okay, yeah. So, and I just, this is my next note, but I already said it. The raccoon does the remember thing, and he helps Francine get her memory back. So now Francine is back to normal, and we left Burning Man. We're at the Smith house, and there is no flag on the flagpole. So episode started with a flag. Now they took it off. So I don't know why I keep track of that, really. I just think it's kind of like a silly thing, because it comes and goes and there's really no rhyme or reason. But I want to keep track of it because I, you know, when I eventually meet Seth MacFarlane, because I am manifesting it and I will reach that goal. I'm telling you all right now. I just want to ask. I just want to know if it's like an animation technicality or something, but I don't know. I'm also absolutely apeshit insane for this show, so I love all these little details. And then it ends with Steve using that CIA technology. He has Jules and Lindsay's memory erased. So they have seen Roger. Both of these characters occur in the show again, and they have no idea that their memory was even erased, which makes sense because Lindsay is like such, like she's kind of mean to Steve later. But it's like, girl, you already like almost made out with him. Like, you know that you're into him, just do it. And you also know that Roger's an alien, but you don't because your memory's gone. And, again, they're ragging on Jewel for her looks, and Stan is like, Steve, I'm really disappointed in you. But then Steve is like, no, Dad, I was trying to get with this one, pointing at Lindsay. And Stan was like, oh my God, I'm so proud of you. Like, again, I can't imagine being that ugly. Oh my God, that must be fucking terrible. I'm not saying I'm some runway model. I am no, like, Margot Robbie or anything. But I'm definitely not ugly. And I just can't imagine being so ugly that, like, nobody wants to make out with me. And people are sad if, like, they make out with me. Like, I don't know. What a bummer. But, again, not my problem. Probably not your problem either. And they made her that way. So, Jewel is there to be ugly. And she does come back. Oh, my God. I can't wait for the episode where she comes back. But, so, that's where we end the episode. Overall, a pretty good episode. You know, like, we really, like, start to see, you know, characters coming into their own. Roger is now starting to venture out of the house. Jeff is more involved. And, of course, we meet Avery Bullock. And if you don't love Avery Bullock, you probably aren't very exciting. I don't know. Maybe you are, but, like, you can't not be exciting and not like Avery Bullock, I think. So, good episode. And also, the animation, again, it is, we are seeing it consistently, like, improve. Like I said, we're starting to see some depth and shadow in the last episode. Now it's really, like, starting to become more vibrant. The characters are looking consistently like themselves. Great shit all around. So, and we start to learn more that not only is Stan an insane man, but Francine is an insane bitch. And we love that for her. I love when girls are insane. It's my favorite thing. Because I'm insane. And I do unhinged shit sometimes. Not to any degree. Like, I've never killed my college roommate. But, you know, I like to go off. As girls do. And as girls deserve. So, now we can kind of wrap up with the trackers. So, to recap, you know, the newspaper headline was Hooker killed for Heart of Gold. R.I.P. to that woman. The flagpole / threat level indicator. Flagpole, or the flag, is on the pole at the beginning of the episode, but it goes away at the end. And the threat level indicator starts off with no arrow, but then appears in between the green and the blue section. The layout, nothing really crazy with the layout in this episode because we're not really at home that much. But the big thing now is that dining room entrance off the kitchen is now conveniently a bathroom for this episode, which I think it is like a couple more times. But, you know, I was watching like some later episodes the other day, and that door fucking changes. And at some point, it's also a hallway. I'm telling you, we're going to see the change of this house, and we're going to follow its progression all the way through. And again, with the goo theory, like Roger leaving the house for the first time in costume is kind of a big deal because the persona thing is really starting to like take shape in the Smith household. And Roger is learning again how to go out into the world without revealing himself. So, you know, this is like the very beginning. And I think if I look back, yeah, that was pretty much it. Like, that was the big thing. He almost got caught, but thank God we had that CIA technology to erase memory. And then for Francine's hobbies, we've seen her be a real estate agent, and that's kind of, that's her first big thing. This one, obviously nothing really happened because she thought she was 19, so that kind of took up a lot of her time. Again, the moon phase, when this episode aired, was first quarter. I think that's waxing crescent. So, and I'm going to be making a calendar, like, at the end of each season to show all the moon phases for each episode. And I think that's going to look really cool. So, if you don't follow me on Instagram and you want to see that, I will be posting it at the end of each season. So, that'll just look cool, I think. I just love the moon. I don't know. And then book titles. Again, I almost missed this one, and I'm glad that I decided to write down this tracker now because I would have missed it. Targeted Killing for Beginners is the very first expositional book title we see. So, again, those are the trackers. Overall, really good episode. What did I give this one as a rating out of 10? I think I gave it, okay, 7 out of 10. You know, we're still coming along. It's still like, you know, the show is still a baby at this point. We're still learning, all getting to know all the characters. But we start to see, like, some good progression with, like, just how their family life goes. So, overall, it's a really good episode. And, sorry, I mixed up all these notes, and now I'm trying to read them again. Okay. So, yeah, I gave it a 7 out of 10. You let me know what you think of this episode. And that's pretty much it. So, my throat is starting to hurt. Again, I'm not used to talking this much by myself, straight. But I'm also going to be recording episode 5, I think, like, right after this. So, anyway, again, I'm Sam from Connecticut. I am your host for Shallow Vows. I'm going to try to start saying that every episode, because every other podcaster, like, introduces themselves and says the name of their show, like, consistently. Anyway, I'm Sam. This is Shallow Vows. Again, I want to say thank you to, like, anyone who is listening who, like, subscribed to me on YouTube. There's only a couple of you right now. And also, if you follow me on Instagram, like, there's only a few of you, but, like, that doesn't matter to me. Like, I am very grateful for, like, anybody that decides to put up with my shit at all. So, if you're listening and, or, like, you're following me somewhere or both, I appreciate you, you know? I'm not here to, like, be super popular or to make money. I'm just here to yap about the show and do it so much that I get Seth MacFarlane's attention. So, if you're deciding to follow along, I don't care who you are. I love you. Thank you very much. And if you want to follow me anywhere, it's just Shallow Vows Podcast on Instagram and on YouTube. And I think it's like the same everywhere. I don't know. I put it out on YouTube and Spotify. I took it off of SoundCloud because, like, that just, like, nobody goes to SoundCloud, I think, to listen to podcasts, so why would I bother? Pandora and iHeartRadio. So if you listen at all and whatever, if you're following along, I appreciate you because you do not have to be here and you're choosing to hang out. So thank you. I will see you guys in the next one, episode 5. Again, I think I'll be recording that right after this one. I need to, like, take a break for a second because my throat really hurts. But I will see you on the next one. Everybody have a great day. And good night, USA. Thank you.
What a performer. Well, let's turn in.
You know what? If you don't get why this day is so important to me, I guess you never will.
Sweetie, I made a mistake. Can't you take a page from that bitch Hillary Clinton and just let it go?
No. This is the most inconsiderate thing you've ever done. I am never going to forget this.
I was afraid you were going to say that. Which is why I got you this card. Open it. I promise it'll make everything better.
There's nothing that could...
Thank God for top secret CIA technology. Just lose the last 20 hours of her memory. That ought to get me out of the doghouse.
Francine, can you hear me?
Don't kick me out! The bouncer said I could, like, totally meet Def Leppard.
Def Leppard?
Francine, what year is it?
Duh, 1985. Hey, anybody got some gum? I want to get the taste of roadie out of my mouth.
Why the hell does my wife think it's 1985?
Huh. Instead of erasing the last 20 hours, I must have erased the last 20 years. Oh, I guess this is the dial for hours, and this is the dial for years. Yeah, yeah.
The last 20 years of your wife's memory have been erased. Well, go ahead and undo it. Reverse brain erasing. Now, that's just science fiction.
Kinda like the female orgasm. Oh, that's great. You gotta do stand-up. You gotta. You're great.
You know, you're not the first person who's told me that.
I bet I'm not. Anyway, Stan, the procedure is irreversible. You're kidding. Pray not. But if you do figure something out, let us know, and we'll name the discovery after you, like they did for Johnny Flyswatter or Doug Reacharound.
You permanently erased Mom's memory?
Well, that's just what the experts at the lab say, but there's no way she could ever forget me. I mean, who could forget this, or this, or these? Go on, kids, give them a squeeze. It's not weird, I'm your dad.
She's coming, too.
One look at me and her memories of our love will come flooding back.
Knock! Knock!
What? Oh, God, is there a bee on me? Oh, does it look Africanized?
Hey, baby.